Hey, folks, the Legoland Podcast is now available on Stitcher. You can download the app or you can like us, listen to us, share us with your friends, and enjoy us on the go. That's the Legoland Podcast, now available on Stitcher. Get the app. All right, let's do this. I really need this to work, please. It's time for the Legoland Podcast with Joe Lewis. Hey folks, welcome to the Legoland Podcast with JoJo Lewis. I'm JoJo Lewis, and welcome to the Legoland Podcast. I'm so glad you guys could make it. This is episode 20. Can you believe it? We've made it to the 20th episode. I'm surprised. Alright, so I'm kind of sleep deprived. Did a lot of driving in the past 2 days. Had to drive down to the Bay Area to perform a show at Cops Comedy Club. That was really fun. Adam Sandler dropped by right after me and Garrett Boatman left, which is extremely embarrassing. But you know what? That's what happens when you leave early. And we've been kicking ourselves all day about it. But in the meantime, I just want you guys to know that today on the show we have a really good guest, and I don't want to detract from that. Just know I'm hanging in there, and the show at Cobbs was really good, and I really needed a good pick me up emotionally in terms of doing well at comedy, and it was nice to get out of town for a while, even if it was just like 2 hours and do a show. Anyway, so today on the show, I'm talking to the very funny Jacqueline Wyand. I think this is the first actual conversation I've ever had with Jacqueline, and it actually gets really interesting. We talk about a lot of interesting stuff, and we talk about comedy and her writing process, and at the very end we get into some personal stuff of hers, and we even have a special treat this episode, kind of like the Jared and Guzman episode. We have a little extra recording thing that Jacqueline was able to provide us that is really cool. So we're going to get to all that pretty much, yeah, right now. Please enjoy my talk with the very funny Jacqueline Wyand. All right, here we go. I think we got it. So okay, so you've heard the show before, right? You know,
yeah.
What it's like. Okay.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know. What's up? How are you?
I'm good.
How's are you excited about getting your paycheck once again?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you
it's
allowed to
gonna
talk?
Be, I can. Yeah, I can talk about it. It's not like anybody. I worked at a really shitty, well, really fancy restaurant. A very fancy restaurant in Davis that I won't name, but it is next door to the Davis Food Co-op. And they pocket the employees' tips, and I quit pretty victoriously.
How'd you quit? Regale us with that tale, because okay. It's a good tale.
Okay, good. Well, I was saving half a Xanax for not that occasion in particular, just like when it would come in handy, and I was like, now's the time. And I'm so glad I did that, because otherwise I would have been a complete mess. Like, I'm not a confrontational person. I probably would have cried at some point, because she has, like, these really scary eyes.
She's,
and she was, like, really close to me.
She's, like, legit, like, kind of out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think so. And I just presented the facts, and I was like, hey, you pocket money from employees, you post-date paychecks, you were late with my last paycheck. And she argued with me for a long time about the accusation of pocketing the tips. Said things like, we're revolutionizing the food industry. And then I was like, well, good luck revolutionizing the food industry. I'm sorry you can't afford to hire servers without taking their tips.
Genius.
And I may have dropped the fact that I have already spoken to the labor board, which is a half-truth, because it was my mom and stepdad who took that extra step.
Okay.
Like, even though I was okay letting them fuck me for an extended period of time, my parents didn't think that was so cute.
And yeah, like, that's not a good thing.
Yeah, so they, like, contacted the labor board to, you know, see how legal their practices were. So what they do, I should like explain what I mean by pocketing tips. It's not like overt. It's not like they steal the tips outright. It's like they add an 18% service charge to every bill. It's not a gratuity. It's like regardless of the size of the party. Just every bill, 18%. And then the menus, printed on the menus, is like tipping isn't necessary, 18% service charge added to every bill. So if they don't ask about that, that just sounds like I get 18%, like, for every bill. And that's, like, shown on the Yelp reviews where people complain about my service. And they're like, these waitresses don't have to try because they're making 18% no matter what. So they don't give a shit. And it's like, well, we don't feel like we have to try because we're not getting anything at all.
Really?
When people are like, what's this 18% service charge you added to my bill? She words it, like, the boss words it ambiguously enough to where it suggests that I get a cut of that. She's like, oh, she sounds like this. Oh, well, we collect it and tax it and distribute it based on performance. And then they're like, oh, okay. That just means I make a dollar above minimum wage an hour. That's my...
That's awful.
So I made $10 an hour and no tips, and it was just soul-sucking.
Yeah.
Like, especially a busy brunch shift where there's no hostess and there's no busser.
So it was pretty much
and just one waitress on the floor.
So the waitress just does everything?
Yeah.
That's fucked.
And you're just running, and then, like, you leave with maybe $3, maybe nothing, because the only money we can keep is cash that people left on the table.
Oh, okay.
And it's an expensive restaurant, so everyone pays with plastic.
That's awful.
Yeah. Oh, and here's a fun thing. When they pay with a card, the receipt prints out, and instead of the line that says tip, this is so boring. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
This is super boring.
No, it's fine.
We have to write included on the service charge line in lieu of a tip line. And if someone jams in a number on top of that, I don't see a cent of it, and I am 99% positive that they apply that when they do that shit.
That's so fucked up.
Yeah.
That's a fucked up place to work.
Oh, God.
Good job getting out, man. That's what you gotta do.
And I get
do.
To go back in there after slamming. They tell you I slammed the door in her face.
You didn't tell me you slammed the door. Like Heinrich
Ibsen. Slam
Ibsen.
It. That's an exaggeration. No, she was like, I was like... up, I was gonna be late for my job at the Punchline, a job where people value me and I feel loved. And I was almost late because she stayed there for so long just arguing with me. So I called in late and I talked to Lauren. I'm like, hey, I'm gonna be late because I just quit my job. And she's like, oh my God, I can't wait to hear about it. Like, I love this job. No, yeah, I was like kind of halfway out her office door when I'm like, so my paycheck will be here by Tuesday, right? And she's like, yeah, but you know what, I'd hate for you to waste a trip, you should really call the restaurant first. And let and in the middle of her sentence I just close the door. I'm like, okay, bye. And I just left beaming, and I was like smiling for the rest of the night.
And it wasn't like, it was like half the Xanax, but really it was just the victory.
No, Xanax kind of makes me a bummer if I'm not, like, really stressed out about something. Like,
really?
I tried taking it recreationally last week at Luna's.
Well, Xanax
were
is
you
a...
at Luna's last week?
I was.
Yeah.
Xanax is a downer, isn't it?
Yeah, and, like, usually it's fine if I'm, like, kind of stressed out, and I was, like, just in general because of that job. I was just, like, sad and stressed all the time.
Yeah.
Counting down the hours until the next time I had to go there. It was awful. But, like, I had one. I'm like, oh, I'll do this. I like how I perform on Xanax. But I wasn't, like, stressed out or anything, so I was just, like... And, like, five people asked me what was wrong.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man,
what's wrong?
Crazy.
You look so sad. I'm like, I guess I don't like this drug.
That's not the drug doesn't like me.
I
love the
like,
beauty of Xanax.
I hate it when people ask what's wrong.
Really?
Yeah,
it's always kind of a fucked up thing. Like, you don't really want to know. Like, I could tell you what's wrong, but it would fuck up your day. I don't need to do that to
and
you.
And most of the time, I'm... fine.
Yeah, or it's
I
like,
just have a resting frown.
It takes more muscles to frown than it is to smile. Fuck.
No, not me.
Yes, fuck you. It does.
This is effortless for me. I'm so good at frowning.
This is the natural. I don't know how people can just smile all the time and be. I feel weird when I see people who are consistently happy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a woman at my work who's legitimately always excited. All the time, which confuses me because she's married and she has kids, and I'm like, how are you not exploding on the inside just a little bit?
Maybe she has a great marriage and great kids.
Maybe she does.
Maybe,
That would be my hope for her. Maybe, but I'm too.
She's
cynical.
Super proud of the life she's created for herself.
Well, good for her. Fuck her, man. Good for her that she found a way to make it work. I go in every day and I feel the need to like. bum people out, which is not good. Like today, they were like, Joe, what's wrong? And I legitimately said, like, there's a point in your late 20s when you wake up and you just don't have any more hope. And that's the moment you become old. And they started laughing, and I wasn't even joking at first. I'm like, there's a moment when that happens, and it's not, and you say you don't have hope, and it's not even exclamatory, it's declarative. You're just stating the, like, I don't think anything will get better.
Boy, I can't wait.
I can't, yeah.
Oh, boy.
You're
22. Oh, I just turned 22.
You're a youngin'.
Yeah.
You have, like, a future still.
We'll see.
You'll see. So, okay, you are, what did you describe it as? Cocktailing at the Punchline. That's your gig now.
I'm training right now, but okay. I also have, like, I work there every day they're open, either, like, cocktail serving, I'm just training now, and or, like, the box office, front box office.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I do that most of the time.
Okay. Cool gig?
Yeah.
Do you dig it?
Uh-huh.
Do you get to meet lots of cool, fancy people?
Yeah, it's surreal, like, around, like, you mean comedians?
Yeah.
Yeah, around comedians who I admire, I'm very nervous. I won't talk to them.
I imagine so.
But then, like, I enjoy the moments with, like, comedians who are celebrity, but who I don't like. Tracy Morgan. Like, when he came through, that was the weirdest shit. Like, I had just started working there when Tracy Morgan came through.
Really?
And I knew I would super love the job when, like, I was just hanging out in the lobby during the first show, and he, like, wanders into the lobby, and he goes, "You got ink!"
You got ink?
And yeah, and then he's like, "You must be into kinky shit. Your boyfriend don't mind." And I'm like, this is
a story.
Tracy Morgan just had this. That's so weird. And any interaction with Bobby Slayton is ridiculous.
Really?
He's come through twice since I've been working there, and both times, also on the subject of my ink, he'll be like, "Here's my tattoo," and he pulls up his sleeve, and he has a tattoo of the Grim Reaper, and he goes, "That's my wife!" He's done that twice. You like my Bobby Slayton impression?
I've never seen him. I've heard mixed reviews on Bobby Slayton. He's like a shocky comic, right?
I appreciate who he is.
Uh-huh.
To comedy, I guess. Like, I can't.
Who is he to comedy?
I don't. He's just like the one of the last of his of that era of comedy that doesn't exist anymore. Of just like, you gotta
like shock for shock's sake.
But and like a lot of street jokes, you know, and like shit. I like the whole week. I saw every performance. His last weekend here. And I would just imagine, like, a white 20-year-old dude at an open mic do all his material, and I'd be like, oh, yeah, I'd fucking hate him. I would fucking hate him if he wasn't Bobby Slayton. But I have to have, like, this sort of, it's like an obligation to have some sort of respect for him.
Oh, yeah, because he's of a different, like, time and just a different
way
of thinking about the
crowd. But if he wasn't Bobby Slayton, I didn't think he was fucking terrible and awful. And he did this one thing that was, like, his quote, about Arab people, about how Arab people are good for nothing and the world would be better, and the only thing that would happen if there's less Arabs is shorter lines at the airport. And then, like, after a while, there were no more punchlines. It just descended into hate, and it was so uncomfortable, and just, like, this crowd of rowdy people who were super on board for it made me super uncomfortable.
Weird.
Yeah. It was super weird, and I was just, like, in the back, like, finally, someone takes brown people down a peg.
They've been sitting a little high in their britches.
Too much power.
Thank God for Bobby Slayton. Keeping it real.
But he's of the opinion that, you know, oh, because I make fun of Jews, too, because I say that I have a big nose, it's totally okay. I take everybody down. That's and it's not, like, that kind of suggests that everyone's on an equal playing field.
Which is not even accurate.
Yeah.
You know, even close. I always wonder, like, what is the line for when you say stuff on stage, like, that you should feel like you're, like, the equal playing field idea?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that exists, honestly. I think if you say something on stage, you've got to have a certain level of empathy for whatever yeah. it is, regardless of like your feelings on it, anger or hate or sadness. You should have empathy for whatever that other thing is, because otherwise it's just
yeah.
it's easy to see it as just
elderly white males aren't the most empathetic
no,
people.
They're not. They are definitely not, because it's yeah. like they're at the tippy top and
oh,
they
yeah.
don't. They have nothing.
Yeah, and fear. They know no other way except for having all of that power.
Yeah, it's like, how can
so
I...
So it's like, oh yeah, you know how everybody has power? Because I have power? You know how?
That would just be a weird thing to hear. It's like, so everyone's got power, right? We
yeah.
all got a little bit? Yeah,
that's pretty sweet. You yeah. know how everybody lives the exact same life and experiences as I do? Because it's all I've known?
Yeah, I don't know how a person can think that or even want to say things like that.
Yeah,
I don't think I would have, yeah. I don't think I would dig. I've never seen him live or on YouTube. I don't think I'd dig him.
No.
Based on what I've heard.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Mike Sella got a guest set there.
That's what I heard. He got
yeah.
a guest set.
Yeah, he did well.
Yeah. And he said there was a part where he picked up a chair and smelled the chair.
Yeah.
I remember oh hearing God. That. I was like, that's kind of creative.
I did. I laughed. He did get me a few times. There
yeah.
were times where I laughed really hard. There were some times where I was laughing while also saying the word, what? He made me do that. But yeah, a lady just got up to use the bathroom, but he made it seem like she was storming off. He's like, yeah, well, fuck you. And then once she was in the back, he like smelled the chair. And then he was like, it's like an early 1990, the subtlety, like it was a wine or something. And then she came and sat down. He's like, what year were you born? She's like, 1990. And the crowd went fucking crazy.
That's pretty smart.
That was pretty That's great. You know what? I love Bobby Slayton now.
He's
I take it back.
You know what? You take the good with the bad, the good wins.
He's
good
exactly
wins
my cup of tea.
Your cup of pee?
My cup of pee. I was telling JoJo that I want to start saying cup of pee.
That's what you got. That's how
just start saying cup of pee, and it'll work when I stop giggling throughout the phrase.
You gotta just
I'm
say
just
it
gonna
totally.
Say it like I think that's the phrase.
Just totally deadpan, like yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Not... It just really wasn't my cup of pee. I don't know.
It's like, you mean tea? No, thank you.
I can't not laugh. I'm a child.
That's the tough part with cool like expressions. Is you think they're awesome, and then it's hard to not giggle through them because they're just awesome things to say.
Can that be my? Like, Emma Haney has her catchphrases. Cup of pee is going to be mine.
Cup of pee can totally be... Emma Haney has too
Nobody
many.
Else wants it. It's all mine.
Emma Haney has way too many catchphrases. She needs to kind of surrender a few of them. Every week she has a new one. She's terrible. The latest
know.
One is Biggs.
Biggs?
Like, no Biggs.
Can you use it? Oh, okay.
Just
no Biggs.
A,
That's
no
cute.
Biggs. Yeah. She's the worst. Anyway.
She's fabulous.
So who are your comedy people? Like who are like the people you like? Because you mentioned a couple of people who you're like, yeah, like to Tracy Morgan, which is weird. But
what?
Like
that
the,
I'm net about Tracy kinda, Morgan.
They, no, you're kind of like not super awestruck. Who are the people who you like look up?
Well,
to?
Well, have you seen Tracy Morgan?
I've seen Tracy Morgan.
I don't know. It's just not my cup of pee.
I like how we're trying to sneak it in. It's gonna come through eventually. But who are your people? Like who are the comics you like look up to or whatever?
Mitch Hedberg is what got me into comedy as I know it now, because prior to that it was just like, oh yeah, comedy, like Blue Collar Comedy Tour.
Oh,
know?
Just like kinda like the
what my dad watched, you know? That's
right,
all
right.
All I knew. And then like a few people on Comedy Central, but then like I found out Mitch Hedberg was a thing and I was like, holy shit. I was like 14, 15 or something
uh-huh.
when I started listening to his albums. And then I got really into, did you ever see Comedians of Comedy, the movie?
Comedians of Comedy, was that with
Maria Bamford and Patton Oswalt?
Yeah, I saw that.
Did
that.
You ever see the TV show when it was a thing?
No, I didn't.
I was really into that.
Really?
It was, because like, you know, it's a reality show with these crazy people who I felt that I super identified with
uh-huh.
in a weird way. But I was just talking to a friend about this the other day. Like, I always felt like I kind of identified with comedians. Like, that's, like, their person, like, their, like, Maria Bamford would, like, talk about, like, taking Prozac and, like, depression and shit.
Yeah.
And, like, I just really, I love Maria Bamford. She's one of my absolute favorites. And I felt this weird connection.
Yeah,
with, like,
yeah.
With that personality type. But I was, you know... It's embarrassing to say that out loud, like when you
It is kind of embarrassing to say that.
And even
out loud,
more but. So when I was a teenager and full of shame. Like, I would never say that, like, I want to be a comedian because I think I could be a comedian and I think that my personality is different from other people's. More like a comedian's personality, you know? But I wanted to be a stand-up comedian for a really long time.
I would write stand-up
in high school and shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, the TV show, I think you can only get it if you, like, torrent it or something. But it's pretty... It's like if you like reality TV and comedians, which
it's
I
like
do.
A combination of your favorite things.
Yeah.
I still feel that way when some comics I find out about or I learn more about, and I find like you don't you look up like comedians now and it like now that you've been doing it for a while, it starts to resonate more the things they say and the way they're
on stage
were.
Or
just in general, like when you read it, like when you read about a comic, like how their life was beyond just their jokes.
Yeah, and like sometimes. I forget that just the average everyday person who isn't completely immersed in comedy and sees it every day, like some stuff isn't common knowledge. Like my dad, like when Robin Williams died, was like, "Did you know a lot of comedians suffer from depression?"
Yeah,
and that was really funny to me. And it's like, "Hey, Dad, we haven't talked in a while."
No,
I guess.
No way, really. What have I been doing all this time? But no, like I'll read stuff on like I've been really into Bill Hicks lately,
mm-hmm.
and I read stuff on Bill Hicks, and I'll read stuff on like Doug Stanhope, and I'll be like, oh yeah, I totally.
Do you like Doug Stanhope?
I really like Doug Stanhope.
I like him. Like even though on social issues and politically, my opinions are vastly different than his. I enjoy him as a comic. Did you see him when he came to Punchline?
I didn't know he was there until after
he
was gone.
Just for one night. But
I heard the show people who came out were not his people. That was my.
Really? That's weird because it sold out. It wasn't like
okay.
It, like people bought tickets to see him.
Cool.
But this is something I found. I don't get offended by comedians often anymore. Like, I'm pretty desensitized. Like, it doesn't make me uncomfortable when I see just a random asshole do a rape joke on stage. It's just, like, fucking whatever. Like, but if a very famous comic does a rape joke to a crowd of people who are dumb but who really like this guy, and then that crowd gets really riled up and gets really aggressive and starts yelling, "Rape!"
Oh,
that's when I start to get uncomfortable. And I had to leave during...
What was the joke?
He was just talking about how, like, he's pro-rape joke, unlike feminist bitches like Janine Garofalo. and then, like, you know, fuck Janine! You know, people are... But I'm almost positive these fans are misinterpreting his message.
I would say
and
so.
And I don't know if it's his responsibility to, like, if he's on stage to, like, change their mind. I don't know. But I do know that a crowd of dumb people getting riled up over a word like rape.
Yeah, that's not the
is
ideal.
Like, I'm going to remove myself from this situation.
It's... I can understand, like, that reaction
so,
would be.
Yeah.
That's probably not what he would have wanted, I would imagine.
And then on the other hand, I got to see most of Ari Spears's performance.
How was that?
I've
heard the Ari Spears show was not a positive experience for those smart on comedy, but for the audiences it was great.
Yeah, a lot of his material was racist and hateful. I'm a person who feels very uncomfortable as a white person calling a minority racist.
It was kind of like...
But he had a whole bit that was just like, Indian dudes are gross, right? And then pretended like he was fucking while doing a stereotypical Indian, like, gibberish thing.
Oh,
which
yeah,
I
know what you're talking about.
And then just, it wasn't that made me uncomfortable. It was like people fucking dying over the most hate-fueled comments. Like,
it's
just an uncomfortable dynamic. It's awful.
Yeah, because if you have enough social awareness to see what's happening, and you're like, why
these people are all evil?
Yeah, like what is it that they think is happening right now?
Yeah,
because it's like it's okay that someone has you know, negative opinions, but when you see a mob of people
yeah.
that are totally on board, that's like horrifying. Because yeah. then it's like, well, then these are people just out in the world.
Yeah. What's and here's a congregation of them.
Yeah. And they're like, and now you all know that they kind of have that mentality, mm-hmm. which is kind of like terrifying. Like I'm of this weird opinion where it's like, if you're going to tell a joke about something fucked up, because I tell a lot of jokes about things that are fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you kind of have to be aware. You have to be more aware of, like, well, what is this going to create in people's heads when you tell it?
Yeah.
And I don't do that all the time, but some stuff, like, I get nervous about it, because it's like, if I don't do this right, it's going to be funny for exactly the reason I don't need it to be funny.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like when I see people who do shit. I've been called a shot comic, like, to my face. People have said that.
Yeah, and didn't they, at least one person, Claire, like, change his opinion about that eventually?
Yeah, they did. But it's, like, it's weird. Like, I don't like the idea of a shot comedian.
Oh, me either.
It really sickens me a little bit.
Just, yeah, shock over writing.
Well, it's like well, it's me. It's
crafting a joke.
Yeah, it's like, it's all shock for shock's sake.
It could be all buzzwords.
It's kind of like
it is all buzzwords.
It's as political. It's as intelligent as like a fireworks performance. It's like fireworks are cool, but you're not like that's it. It's just flash and then you're done.
Yeah,
that's to me what shock comedy is. It doesn't really do like I can't remember any fireworks show I've ever seen. I like them. But yeah. I can't remember a specific one.
Yeah.
I feel weird when I see people just saying shit that doesn't... Because when I hear someone use, like, rape or anything, like, typically
yeah.
shocky, I always yeah. like, well, where are they going to go with this? And oftentimes they go nowhere. And I'm like, well, that's weird.
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
Yeah.
Go on.
I mean, it's not really topical anymore, but, like, for a hot minute... the rape jokes were, like, in the media, because, like...
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, for whatever reason, that was the first time someone heard Daniel Tosh do a rape joke, and it was totally fucked up.
Yeah, I remember.
And all that shit. But that was, like, that. The topic for a while. And then I would be like, there are some rape jokes I like. There are absolutely some rape jokes I like. You can't just think about it in buzzwords. Like, not all rape jokes are the same. Not all rape jokes make the joke out of the victim of rape.
Yeah, some jokes are just...
Some jokes are intelligent commentaries on rape,
yeah.
and they involve the word rape.
But if we just kind of blanket say we can't use the word rape, then it's kind of like, well, then we're admitting that this is fucked up, but we're refusing to talk about it.
Yeah, I don't...
Which is like a holdover for, like, repression and
but
not good stuff.
On the other hand, the word rape can, you know, trigger actual rape victims.
No doubt.
And there are other words that, like, could... Like, Jamie changed the word rape in one of her jokes to sexual assault. I don't know. I like the way it flows better.
Sexual...
You know what joke I'm talking about?
I don't know exactly which joke you're talking about, but I do like changing rape to sexual assault.
Yeah.
That's like he took rape and you put a bow on it.
Yeah. I don't know. I like it. It's not so harsh.
It's almost romantic in a weird way.
And now it's hard to, like, say the word. I'm assuming. I didn't talk about rape on stage myself. But I'm assuming because it is such a buzzword, it's hard to, like, not sound like you're just trying to...
Oh, no doubt.
Use that to an effect.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Even if that's not the intention.
It's kind of a weird, almost, like, a cliche,
mm-hmm.
like, to say rape or any one of the really dirty words that you're not, like... You can't say cunt on stage unless that's weird. But
yeah.
But most people don't. They tend to use the word just because, the word
to elicit a reaction.
Yeah, to get that reaction.
Yeah,
which is pointless. If you have that reaction, you should do something positive with it.
Yeah,
other definitely. Than just...
Well, you know that one Steve Ferris joke where he says the word cunt.
Oh, what? Which one was that? I think I know what joke you're talking about.
Salivation Army.
I love Steve Ferris. He makes me laugh legitimately every single time I see him. And it's always a stressful laugh because it's always...
I think he got annoyed at me yesterday.
Really?
No, he was on stage. I was cutting it. I hosted Scramble and I am bad at saying no to people. So I made the list way too goddamn long.
Yeah.
So I cut everyone's time a little bit short. And so he had a shorter set and he was last and people weren't saying, let's hear jokes. Oh, when he asked what they wanted to do, they went, let's party, like all the typical stuff.
Let's leave,
and he had like a minute left, and I'm like, this is, oh my God. So I'm just like, you should tell some jokes. And he's like, I want to hear what they want to do. I'm like, sorry for disturbing your craft.
I imagine that.
Because that's always a good cheat.
Like, it is a cheat.
Me or Robert Berry will usually do it.
Yeah, when you see, like, I feel nervous when I'm in a room with him and it's full of people because I'm like, I know what he's, I feel like I know what he's trying to do, but at some level it's like, it's going to degenerate to just telling jokes because we can't really establish a party. Like, no one's going to go out to Smart and Final and come back with shit.
Yeah.
It's going to...
By the time your time is up.
Yeah. Which, I mean, maybe that'll happen one day, but until then, it's kind of just... I watch it happen on, like, pins and needles. Like, how long is it going to go before I can feel... And then there's jokes, and then everything's fine again.
Yeah.
It's nerve-wracking. It's nice, but it's nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay, here's a question I legit have, because it has come up in conversation. By you. How much time can you do? Because you've been you've been doing comedy, like, a longer than me, at least by a year, I think.
Yeah. Is this to make me feel bad?
No, I'm just curious.
15?
I'm 15?
Yeah.
Okay.
15, I'm a solid 15.
Okay.
But 20.
Okay.
But 15.
But 15. So you have like a...
I'll tell Booker's 15.
You can like... So you can legit like have a good feature set.
Mm-hmm.
You can feature?
I don't think so, no. That's like 30.
It's 20 to 30.
Is it 20 to 30?
Yeah, I think a feature is normally like...
I'm comfortable hosting. I'm getting better at hosting.
Yeah.
I'm good at feigning enthusiasm to get energy up.
That's so much of it. Like, wasn't that fantastic? And at a party, you're like, that was garbage. Yeah! What are you supposed to do? Well, what's like your... Like, what's the process you go through when you come up with a joke? Like, how do you work it out on stage? Like, what do you do?
I've changed the process since starting,
uh-huh.
So a lot of my jokes went through a different process.
Okay.
Because before I did stand-up, I would write short stories and shit. I would write out jokes like a short story, which would make it the wordiest thing that, like,
oh, God, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And because, totally, you know, you can read a funny story and be like, this is a funny story, but no one wants to sit there for... That's why I love Jamie's Story Bag Show, because I got to write how I write.
Yeah.
And, like, people could just sit and enjoy, like, a story and everything without, like, it has been 45 seconds since we have laughed.
I
so
remember,
where is this going?
I remember, I think we were on Stab together, and you did something, it was like a... Oh my God, what was it? It
was this
like,
the most recent time?
Yeah, and yeah. It was basically like you were trying to write a commercial for a bookstore, like an Islamic bookstore in downtown Salt Lake. And I still think about that's one of the funniest things I've ever heard.
Really?
Yeah, it's like, you like books, you like the Quran? We have books. And it's like, that's ridiculous. I'm on board. But it was like, I remember hearing that, I was like, holy fuck, that's awesome. But it's like, I feel like every time I've seen you, it's been the same 5 to 7.
I have a new joke. Did you hear my new 2 jokes that I have?
Are they short jokes?
I have a new one-liner, and then that joke about shaving my pussy is fairly new.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah.
I saw that one when you first started doing it. I saw the evolution to the wagon, and...
I don't do the wagon part anymore. It doesn't hit for whatever reason, but
you've cut the wagon.
I'll do it sometime.
That's what
but
made it.
No, do you were there the first night when I'm like, I'm never doing this fucking joke.
Everyone
was so uncomfortable.
I was. Yeah.
That someone was like, yeah, I don't want to think about baby vagina. That's weird.
It's like, what did you come to comedy for?
What did you?
What are you doing here? You don't want to hear about baby vagina?
Well, why not?
You want to hear about the male? Fuck you.
No, I'm just... I lack self-discipline.
Really?
I'm doing Fresh 5 beginning of November.
Okay.
So that will be a good exercise, like having a deadline and shit. But typically, I'll think of something and make a voice memo in my phone. And like... revisit that later.
Yeah.
But like, I say that, but I have a bunch of stuff in my voice memos that I haven't.
Kind of like that old Hedberg bit, like, if I think of something, I have to find a pen. And if I can't find a pen, I just got to convince myself it wasn't funny.
Yeah. But it's not like I have a huge amount of jokes, but all my jokes kind of had a different process. Like that, I call it the soup joke, the one that's, I haven't done it in a long time.
It's the one about being a compulsive liar?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had that conversation with myself in the shower, and I was like, I should write it down. Just and I started having an argument about soup in the shower, and it made me laugh a lot.
I get
so
that.
So I did that.
Sometimes that's how it happens, where you're just like hanging out, and you're hit, and you're like, I have to save that. Yeah. I need to save that idea.
It's so weird to me. I need to do it. And, like, I do a lot of the jokes that were in my first 5 minutes that I just wrote as a homework assignment for the stand-up class I was in.
Really?
Yeah.
Which jokes are those ones?
I haven't done them in a while. Like, in five-minute sets, I haven't done them in a while. The one about teen magazines.
Oh, I don't think I've seen that one.
I had one about flirting I did for a while, where I just, like, whisper into the microphone. Shit. You haven't... Okay.
I don't remember this.
I'll do old shit around you sometime. Because... Yeah. I've been working on, like, a... You know, my newer stuff. But, you know, newer as in a few months ago.
Yeah. Do you feel like you should... Do you feel like you could be creating more? Because I know that Stab is kind of like... You had 2 days to come up with stuff and...
Yeah. And I love that. Yeah. I love, like... Because I... Again, no self-discipline. Deadlines helps.
Do you work better with a deadline?
Yeah.
I do, too.
I think so. I'm excited for Fresh Five and terrified because I haven't written it. This new one-liner I'm doing now, I was like, I'll save it for Fresh Five. I'm like,
I got to keep it.
It's 15 seconds. I can...
It's like, now you have a whole 4:45 left to figure out. Jackie, what you going to do now? Shut up, voice and head. I'll figure this out. I do like the Fresh Five. I feel like I do jokes too quickly, and then I abandon them to a new set too often.
Yeah.
Because that's something I do a lot. Like, I'll come up with a set, and I'll do it, like, 4 or 5 times.
Uh-huh.
And it'll work.
And then you won't do them anymore.
And I just won't do them anymore. I'll just be done with it and move on. That's actually what I've been doing... Like, lately, systematically, like, every week I'm doing this set this week, and then after the week's done, it's just gone. And I feel like I'm missing out on something by not working it out over a longer period.
I don't know. I know that I don't write as often as I'm supposed to, but I'm really proud of how tight I've made the time that I do have.
Yeah, no doubt.
Because,
you're one of the most consistently... good, even when in the room is garbage, you often get laughs that most people can't get.
Oh, thanks.
Because the set works so, it's so, like, well put together.
Thank you.
Yeah. Was that weird to hear?
I'm super great at taking compliments.
Well done.
Usually I respond with the fart noise, but I don't want to spit into your...
You don't, you know, man, compliments aren't your cup of pee, it's fine. We're going to make it. It's going to be a good expression. It's going to get out there.
Oh, man. I love bathroom humor.
Who doesn't? It's good humor.
I appreciate it the most. Like, the times I can remember, like, cry laughing is always a poop joke.
do you ever get, like... Are those the kind of jokes where you laugh so hard, like, you have trouble, like, breathing?
I always have trouble breathing because I have nasal problems.
You know what I mean. You know exactly what
I mean. I cry a lot. My eyes will, yeah. Like, it's embarrassing because I'll, like, think something is super funny, and then people will be like, what's wrong?
I'm like, that was great.
But happy tears.
Do you feel like, maybe this won't make sense, do you feel like the tears are really close to the surface a lot of the time, just going through day-to-day life? No?
I don't cry out of sadness a lot.
Yeah?
I stress cry. If I get overwhelmed, I'm very quick to cry.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's like shit gets too heavy, you're like, fuck it.
Not even, like, just... like, in traffic. Like, if I didn't have that Xanax when I quit my job, I know I would have cried. Because she's, like, just staring at me and calling me a liar and, like...
So so confrontational.
Yeah, I'm not confrontational at all. That's the opposite of what I am. Although, today, I went into my roommate's room and asked her if she could clean her cat's litter box more often.
Yeah.
And she's like, quitting your job really changed you. I'm really proud of how, like, you confronted me about this. This is so unlike you. And I'm like, oh.
It's like,
I guess so.
It just seems like a normal, okay.
Turning over a new leaf.
A new confrontational leaf.
Yeah.
About to be a monster to people.
About to be even more of a bitch. Did I showed you that, right? The one-star review that someone left the Comedy Spot because of me?
No. Wait, show me it. Show me it, yeah.
On my phone?
Yeah, do it now. I want to see it. I can make time by talking. She's getting her phone, and now it's, I don't know if you've ever seen it, it's a purple-black case. It's very Kings-esque.
It was in the lost and found drawer at the Punchline. That's where I got this.
Classic.
No, Brian Krall messaged me and was like, did you host the Monday Night Scramble? And I was like, yes. And he's like, someone left a little bit of background while I'm finding this.
Someone left a review that was not positive?
A little, well, at 7:50, someone comes in, and it was a person who I have only seen at Starlight Lounge with Kathy Griffin, bitch.
Oh, red hair?
Yeah, he's a friend of hers.
Oh, fucking A. That fucking chick.
He showed up at Comedy Spot at 7:50, and I was three drafts into the list.
Yeah.
And he's like, can I have a set? And I was like, what? Sign-ups were at 7:30. And he's like, yeah, I got over here as fast as I could. And I'm like, I'm almost done with the list. I'm sorry. And he's like, but it's my birthday. And I'm like, sorry, dude. And like, I just went back to my job. And hold on. Why can't I find this Comedy Spot?
So I know exactly which person you're talking about. Because Starlight Lounge has pretty much the same ensemble cast week to week. And crazy Kathy Griffin with her friend are always there.
Yeah.
And so chatty. God, I hate her.
Yeah, she tags people's jokes.
I think she thinks we're having a conversation, which is the most dangerous kind of heckler to me.
Again, something seems so obvious to me, but not everyone is totally immersed in comedy in their everyday life.
Well, it just seems
It seems like people just don't know how basic, like, comedy etiquette is.
Yeah.
Like, the amount of people I see get kicked out of, like, comedy clubs.
Does it happen in Punch more often than not?
Yeah, like, they're really good about crowd control there.
Really? That's good.
Yeah. More so than...
Well, they allow, like... Are they, like, kind of swift, one strike, you're out? Or is it more like, we'll see
how this
goes?
They'll talk to you, but most of the time, like, first-time offenders aren't like, oh, no, I'm sorry, I'll stop. They're just loud, obnoxious people who want to get kicked out. Okay, one star. I was on my way to the Comedy Spot to do... I'm going to read this verbatim. I was on my way to the Comedy Spot to do open mic, and on my birthday, the Lyft driver got lost, so I was a few minutes late to sign up. Whoever was running it was very rude and didn't say anything except, no, I can't sign up, and ignored me. Oh, is there more? Yeah. This was October 6, 2014 for open mic. I was hoping she would have been friendlier or say try next week or something, but just a no, go away. And I also brought about 6 to 8 people to see me perform. I was very disappointed.
Did he really bring 6 to 8 people?
He didn't tell me that, and even so, they're like, I asked that at 7:30. Also, I did not tell him, no, go away.
He's exaggerating.
I can't imagine me saying that. That, like, I like keep going back to that interaction. I don't say go away. That's not a thing that's in my go away.
What a weird guy.
I'm getting a lot of negative reviews just in, like, at the job I just quit. My boss made sure to show me a couple of one-star reviews about my service as a waitress.
That's kind of a shitty thing to do.
It was just one table, and they both wrote separate reviews about how shitty I am.
Really?
Yeah.
That just sounds like they wanted to ruin someone's life for a second.
Yeah, I mean, there's a very specific kind of person that... Is that picking up?
A little bit. It's okay. It's not a huge deal.
Okay. very specific kind of person that will write a Yelp review, I think.
Even if I have a shitty time at most places, I never feel compelled to go, like, pick up a pen. That seems too much work.
Yeah. The type of person that will write a negative Yelp review about the punchline is always a person who got belligerently drunk and tried to fight one of the bouncers. So.
Those bouncers are too good at judo. I just couldn't. Just so good at judo. Who needs that for comedy?
This is a comedy club. I came to laugh, not get judo chopped.
Yeah, that's what they all say. And a few shots of Jägermeister later, they're on the ground. Who's at fault? Shit, I don't know. She broke the momentum was broken.
Sorry,
for a
second. I got okay. Awkward.
For, I know. I was like, whoa.
I started to get self-conscious and like, what does my conversation sound like from someone coming in the middle of this conversation?
It sounds good. We've gone for 45 minutes. Oh, cool. You know that? Just clipped that's along cool. Really, really easily.
Well, I was also like looking at shit on my phone for maybe 2 minutes.
You're right. For two, so we should probably stretch or I don't know.
Sure.
Do you have any questions? I've kind of been bombarding you with like crazy questions. Do you have anything?
They're not
to ask
that
me?
Crazy. You could have asked crazier questions based on what you know about me.
I do know some things about you that I'm sort of curious about, but
you should ask.
I almost don't want to because I don't want to typecast you.
What is that? What do you mean?
I have a feel. Here's I feel like maybe this is my hang up.
I want to hear what the typecast is.
I don't want the. Okay, tell me. All right, just explain the cam girl thing to me.
I don't do it anymore.
Okay.
But it was a thing I did when I only had one part-time minimum wage job to supplement bills and rent and shit.
Okay. Did it pay well?
It would have paid well if I were on multiple websites or just on a better one. Mine wasn't too... A lot of people who would talk to you for free, and, like, act like they were going to pay for shit,
but then
waste your time and be like, oh, well, I'm poor, sorry. That's and then awful. You had to be like, well, on to the next. And it's, like, the same. Like, it wasn't great for, like, I'd be in positions where I'm like, I have to make $200 by this weekend. And then I'll just be on the computer all fucking day trying to, like, entice men. Which is the worst. And it's not... The most draining part of it was having conversations with people and, like, trying to make really... Acting like really boring, awful people, corny people, were really interesting and funny and worth my time.
Oh, kind of like the whole... Like any type of stripper aesthetic where
yeah.
It's like, oh yeah,
that's
that
what
sounds
a lot
like
of,
it would be a nightmare.
That's what a lot of sex work is, yeah. Like, is, and that is the most degrading part,
really, just like showing interest.
Showing, in like the worst people, like talking to corny 18-year-olds trying to be funny at me and then being like, hee hee.
That's awful.
That was, and then like, I'd be on Facebook and some asshole I didn't want to talk to would message me and I'm like, God damn it, you're not even going to pay to see my boobs. What is the point of this conversation? In no mood.
You just respond with a PayPal link. Fuck you, pay or fuck off. Don't need this pressure.
Yeah.
So you don't do it anymore?
Yeah, I mean, I still have my account because if I'm ever in a position where I'm like, there's no way I'm in this, like, I need to make $200. I guess there's nothing I can do. Well, there's something I can do. I'd rather not do it, but, you know.
Did you feel like, was it weird coming back to, like, the world after having to do the work for a while?
No.
No?
I mean, it would be something I'd talk about. Like, just, it wasn't a secret or anything.
Okay.
Yeah. What do you mean going out into the world just like...
I don't know. I didn't know that about you. I think I heard that secondhand about you.
From whom?
I think it was from Jamie, actually.
Oh, cool.
Not in a fucked up way. Just
Of course not.
She was talking about a show you did where you told a story about it.
I have that recording still. I'm really proud of it. The story that I did. Like, it did really well. And, like, I had people suggest I bring that story to the stage. Like, you know, make it tighter. Make it... More.
Have you thought about submitting it to places like The Moth or Snap Judgment? NPR
not
shows?
Really. I don't know.
Because you can do that. Like, that's not...
Yeah, I mean,
if you don't want to tighten it and take it to stage, like, because yeah. I heard it was a really, of the stories that were on that show, that was like the near the top. It was really good.
It was. I was proud of it. At the time, my dad didn't know that I did that. My mom knew.
Because your dad, like,
but I found out he hasn't. My mom told me that she told my dad, but my dad hasn't made one comment about it at all.
Interesting.
But, like, yeah. So I'm not, that was something I was kind of scared of.
Was your family kind of repressed?
I was raised Jehovah's Witness.
Ah, so.
My dad's still a Jehovah's Witness. My mom is disfellowshipped, excommunicated.
Ah, okay.
Essentially. Like, my whole family is Jehovah's Witnesses, so that means nobody can talk to my mom.
Interesting.
That's what disfellowshipping
can people, or can they talk to you?
I was never baptized, so I avoided getting disfellowshipped.
Okay.
But my family still won't talk to me.
That's exciting.
I don't blame them.
Do you feel kind of disconnected from, like the familial roots? Like, do you feel like you're not connected to people because of that?
I don't. My relationship with my dad is fairly new. I wasn't really close to him at all. He was going through some stuff growing up. And then once my mom left, he was like, oh shit, I have no relationship with you. Let's let's repair this. Which was weird at first, because it's like, I barely know you, guy.
Just making up for lost.
Yeah, at first it was a weird transition.
He's like, let's have a catch. And you're like, you don't, what?
But now I think we have a really good relationship.
Okay.
It took some time. And my mom, we get along better now, but I've always felt like we had more of like a friend relationship than like a mother-daughter relationship.
Yeah.
Not in a Gilmore Girls kind of way, I don't think. Well, but she, you know, yeah. She's a young mom.
Yeah.
And stuff.
Well, that's sort of the semi-issue I had with my mom is that's like, it was kind of a friendly relationship,
mm-hmm.
and then when shit got bad, I react like if a friend did something fucked up to me.
Yeah.
Which I know I'm not supposed to do, but it's hard to, like,
yeah.
suppress that.
And, like, if I said I wanted more of a mother relationship, I wouldn't even know, like, what to ask for in particular, like, yeah. to make it more of a mothery relationship. Maybe this is what it is, because this is all I know, but, like, it's just a feeling I get.
Did you grow up with both parents around, like, consistent?
Yeah. They divorced right before I moved out.
Oh, okay.
Like, when I was 17.
Why is that the golden age to get divorced?
John Gamora.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just thinking of that. Like, why would you do that? That makes no sense.
Yeah.
Well, that's exciting.
Uh-huh.
At least you had the double parent experience.
Yeah, I super didn't get along with them at all.
I can imagine why.
I didn't want to be a Jehovah's Witness. I decided when I was 15. And then it was like, oh, that sucks. You still have to go to church twice a week for 2 hours.
Look, we're not getting a sitter. You're coming.
I had to get in a huge fight with my mom to avoid going out door to door. Like, after deciding I didn't want to be a Jehovah's Witness, I'm like, why would I want to knock on people's doors on a Saturday morning and
yeah.
tell them to convert to a religion that I don't believe in? That doesn't seem fair.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem right. I don't know. And I won that fight eventually, but it was, like, a struggle.
Really?
Like, how do I explain this any better?
It just feels weird to me. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much. And now my mom's not a Jehovah's Witness, and we, like, talk
really?
Some shit about, like, how messed up it is. And I'm like, why weren't you? Why couldn't you have this opinion a few years ago?
That's good.
Yeah.
It's good that you have... It's good to keep those relationships going.
Yeah, definitely.
Because then that'll probably be what keeps you from waking up in your 20s going, oh, shit. There's just nothing. It's just emptiness.
Again, can't wait.
Yeah, it's not... It's, don't... Don't hold your breath for it. It's kind of shitty.
Mm.
That was a good downer. This is the Xanax of podcasts right now. I'm kind of happy about it.
Was that the only question you had that you were afraid to ask?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, okay. I can ask others. I can think of mean things to
do.
Ask.
Oh my god, make me cry. I used to be so much fun at parties, and I would get drunk and tell strangers to make me cry. Because I wanted to see what would happen. I knew they wouldn't.
I can't do that because I'm not a mean person. I don't want to hurt people. Like my immediate thought was half shirt. You're tying your shirt in like a halfy way. That's dumb. But that's all I could think of, honestly. That's what's going on in here.
Oh.
There's nothing in there.
Is this too much?
Not too much. Okay. I don't even mean it. That's all. I don't know how to be mean to people spontaneously. I just can't do it.
So no mean questions? You have mean questions?
I had no mean questions.
Oh, okay.
I had questions I felt weird about asking. Yeah, that was it.
Oh, okay.
That was it. Is there anything I should ask about that would be cool?
No.
Okay.
No.
Do you want to ask me anything, or am I just too open bookie?
I don't know. So how's camping for you?
How's what?
Being a cam girl.
It's the best thing that I don't know. I honestly feel like I've never thought to look at cam girls, honestly.
Yeah, it's...
It feels like, to me, there's a level of intimacy there that weirds me out, which sounds ridiculous. But.
From my perspective, there seems to be two types of guys that will seek out that kind of thing. And the one that I was on was very much, it wasn't like the public show where people just tip you and it's just like a big room. It's one-on-one, and it's very much plays into like, it's either a guy who just really likes the idea of getting to know a cool girl and like talking to her first, like getting to know her, and then being like, I get to see this cool girl naked, you know?
That is the dream.
So, yeah. So a lot of the work was just, like, amping up my personality, like, quirkier and shit to appeal to, like, dudes who are into that.
Uh-huh.
Like, manic pixie dream girl sort of garbage. But, yeah. I just mostly be myself, but amped up a little bit.
Okay.
Or a guy with a really specific fetish that's hard to Google.
Yeah, see, I was never. I like the things I watch to have a fourth wall, and that would freak me out.
Yeah.
What I've heard is, and I don't know how true this is, like a lot of the people who take advantage, or not take advantage, but like who utilize like the more intimate services than just videos, it's like a really oddly cheap therapy.
I get that. Like, well, especially for some of the fucked up fetishes that, like,
it's like how am I supposed to express
I have
that?
So many guys, not so many, a few guys whose thing was he just wants a video of me berating his tiny penis.
Really?
Yeah, that's it. I have to laugh at it. I have to call him worthless and like useless penis. Because I don't want anything to do with this.
You can't phone it in either. You gotta be like, okay, I gotta get in the character of someone who's truly disappointed.
I was like, no, thank you.
I was counting on this penis, and now, ugh.
That's okay. I don't... Yeah, so there's like a lot of that. And they were always like, they wouldn't buy anything from me because I was too expensive.
Guys, she's a little too top shelf.
All guys with tiny dicks are super cheap. New stereotype I'm starting.
am I right, ladies?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of that. A lot of... oh, man. One guy wanted me to say the N-word a bunch. I drew the line there.
Really? He just wanted to see you do that?
And maybe... And it was part of this whole, like... this whole fantasy that it had, like, continuity to it. Every time we did a new show, it would, like, continue from where we left off.
Uh-huh.
And I think I would have felt more comfortable with it if it was like a black guy, because who am I to judge what experiences he went through to make him super into that?
Yeah,
like where am I? But it was a white guy who wanted me to say the N-word.
That's so weird.
Because his fantasy was he had like a cuckold fetish. So his fantasy was. I'm his wife.
Oh.
We're married. And he walks in on me, and I'm just getting plowed by a black guy. And then I have to, like, berate my husband's tiny penis and, like, talk about how great this black guy's penis is.
Huh.
And luckily, like, I was so bad at manufacturing, like, dirty talk.
Yeah.
And whatever for, like, weird scenarios like this.
So he would, like, would he send you a script?
Not a script, but he'd be like, say this now. Okay, now say this. Okay, now, like, just in text. Like, say this. And once in a while, I'd, like, ad-lib, and he'd be like, oh my god, you ad-libbed.
Like a director, like, smart move.
Yeah.
Move over to scene 3.
But he kept having me say the N-word in a positive way. I love the... And, like, I kept being like, nah, man, nah. And he kept making me say it, so, like, then I would awkwardly say what he told me to say, but I'd say the word N-word instead. I'm like, now you get awkward dirty talk. This is what happens. When you go past my boundaries.
Should have read the contract. Tip. No gratuity fee for... I don't know. Well, shit, I don't know. Do you think we've gone far enough? Do you think we've talked about enough things?
You think it was interesting?
I think it was interesting. I think it was a good talk.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
We didn't get too sad, but that's fine. I'm in a really good mood. I'm in a really good mood.
Yeah, you're
week.
In a good mood because you're in a good place right now.
Yeah, for now.
I'm in a bad mood, but that's what I bring to the table. So it was a good counterbalance.
Good.
I think it went okay.
Great. Cool. Great.
Thanks for doing this, Jacqueline.
My pleasure.
Hey, folks, that's been the show. Thanks for listening to it. I really appreciate it. Again, download us on Stitcher. You'll really like us on there. We're also on the iTunes. You can like us and review us and share us from there. And now, like I said, Jacqueline provided us with a very special gift for this episode. And what that was is it's a story that Jacqueline Wine told at the Story Bag about her time as a cam girl. It's really interesting, really cool, and I hope you guys like it. Enjoy it. Also, it works. See you next week.
All right, everybody give it up for Jacqueline Wyatt.
Ready. Thank you.
Hey, guys, what's up? I got in trouble a lot as a teenager. Like, I remember making my mom cry a lot. But none of the stories really stand alone as its own 8 to 10 minute story. None of them are particularly interesting. But the most trouble I ever got in was probably just when I was 15 and I told my parents that I didn't think I believed in God anymore. And I tried to be really tactful about it. I tried not to make any waves. I tried to be as subtle as possible. You know, I wasn't like, you know, ugh, God's gay, so am I. The last part was a later conversation, which turned out to be a half-truth. But I may as well have done all that, because I just told my Jehovah's Witness family that when Armageddon comes, surely in our lifetime, I would be wiped out along with all the other people in the world, and I would not be joining my entire family in a paradise earth for the rest of their lives, which is forever, because that's what they believe. And that's it. So they didn't take that super well. The punishment for that was just years of arguing about not wanting to go door to door spreading the good news that I had lost faith in. Like, what's the point of that? What's the point of bothering people on a Saturday morning with things I don't even believe in? And the consequence was, like, so draining to me that I just couldn't imagine rebelling any further than that. So, like, I never, like, experimented with drugs or alcohol or sex or friendship. Anything like that. Which wasn't that hard, because nobody was offering me any of those things. And the second most trouble I've ever gotten in was probably when my mom found out that I ordered a dildo on Amazon. In hindsight, it was a ridiculous purchase. Like, I had just discovered masturbating when I was 15, and I heard on Sex and the City that rabbit vibrators were the bomb, so I'm like, sign me up. My mom found it immediately before I could even open it, which was for the best. Like, it's too girthy for someone who's not sexually active, to be honest. And I can't even promise you that I would know what to do with it now. I can promise you that if your parents find a dildo on your doorstep, they'll want to have a talk with you. And if your mom is weird about sex, you're going to have a really uncomfortable Christian-slanted masturbation talk with your dad. So that was good. No, I can't unremember him starting the conversation going, I had that problem when I was your age. And then he told me to never do it again. So, that's how that went. I don't know how many of you actually know me. Like, really know me. So I'm going to do an introduction just like in the fucking middle of this. I'm Jacqueline Wyand. I'm 21 years old. I've been doing stand-up comedy for like a year and a half now. I work part-time at a comedy club. My favorite Pop-Tarts are the s'mores ones, even though everyone says they're too sweet. And my main source of income is getting naked on webcam. And I started doing that in like 2012. I started dating a stripper whose roommate was an escort, and they shared a sugar daddy. So I just got immersed in like the world of sex work and got completely desensitized to it within like a short amount of time, but also really excited about the idea of just abandoning all the shame that I had accumulated as a child. So, I don't know, like as a goof, I tried out posting a naked picture of myself on the internet, and I was really surprised about the positive response that I got. And I should say that at the time, I was 50 pounds heavier and not super into myself. So this was kind of like a turning point. Like, oh, okay, there's something to this. There's something to my boobs. There's something here. So I tried it out. I, like, why not? And I got really excited about it. I heard about it through another friend, just getting naked on webcam and having men pay for that. And like, as soon as the idea popped into my head, I'm just thinking about all this crazy stuff that I'm gonna do, and I'm like thinking about what I'm going to be comfortable with and what I'm gonna be uncomfortable with. And I decided I'd be okay with piss play as long as it's in the shower, because like I do that anyways if I'm super tired. So, and I'm thinking all this stuff. I didn't know that men whose big weird thing is big titties are the most vanilla, boring motherfuckers. The most popular request I got upon starting becoming a webcam model, if you will, was light boob play, which is the most disgusting thing. And I mean, more power to you if you want to pay me for something you Google image search for free. but that's where I started making money. So I started doing that. And I was just kind of, I got kind of lazy about it once the excitement kind of wore off. I was just like, oh, this is just work, pretty much. And I made some money here and there, but kind of lost interest. But like the last show I did in 2012, I was doing a web chat with this guy and like moaning his username as if saying a string of numbers in ecstasy. And this is true. My laptop makes a noise, and I look down, and it's an email from the comedy spot informing me that they're enrolling classes. And I'm like, oh shit, I've wanted to be a stand-up comic my entire life, and I'm naked on the internet right now. And I'm just thinking, like, best case scenario for my dream, this is probably going to be a thing. Like, there is recorded evidence of me being naked and moaning this weird, long username. So, in that moment, I deleted everything. I deleted that account and all evidence of me ever being nude on the internet. A couple months into being a stand-up comic, I realized how absurd that fear was. Like, I'm not going to be famous. I don't want to be famous. Like, it's not even a thing. And also, I'm super poor. So I started doing that again. But since starting doing stand-up comedy, I lost some weight, and I found that, like, it's different when your body isn't as fetishized anymore. Like, I had to work a little bit more. Like, I couldn't just exist as, like, a hot, fat chick with fat titties. Like, that was all I had to do before. And now I had to work a little bit harder, just being, like, an average-sized person with good average titties. But it was super easy to adapt to. Like, faking masturbation is the easiest thing. Like, it's borderline formulaic. And, like, Jokes on them. I do not sound like that when I come. I sound like I sound like I'm crying. That's a true story. So that was super easy. And that's what I do for a living. That's like what I do for rent and my phone bill. And I'm not ashamed of it. Like, I'm here, I'm talking about it. And I don't think I should be. Like the great feminist Missy Elliott said, ain't no shame, ladies, do your thing. Just make sure you're ahead of the game. And if you tell your child not to masturbate, they'll do it for a living.